don't know. It's where I've been and who I am, all the ways I've grown.
This isn't self-help, it's a full-on rebirth. Welcome to Girl Wake Up, the podcast for women who are done playing small, staying silent, or living by rules they never wrote. I'm Amy Polacco, journalist, divorce and life coach, and freedom warrior, and I'm here to help you take your power back. Because the system isn't going to save us. We need to save ourselves. So grab your coffee, your courage, and maybe a few curse words. It's time to wake up. Welcome to Girl Wake Up, everybody. I'm Amy Polacco, and today's episode is called Family Court is Not Fair. Because for too many women, the biggest shock isn't just the divorce itself. Ask me how I know. It is realizing that the system meant to protect families often does not feel fair at all. And I know I'm preaching to the choir. Some of you listening have been through this. It can be expensive. It can be exhausting, deeply unequal, and full of pressure to settle, stay silent, or simply just to survive it. You know, my guest today is Kimberly Cook, who knows this world inside out. Thanks for being here, Kimberly.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to chat about this. Great topic.
And I met her initially when she was in one of my Ms. Magazine articles, right? About how January is not really divorce month. We're thinking about divorce month, right? But I want to tell you guys about her. Kimberly is a highly respected divorce and family law mediator and attorney based in Chicago, known for her, you know, ability to turn complex, emotionally charged situations into workable solutions. She's guided by compassion, composure, and clarity and helps families navigate major life transitions. She's deeply committed to ensuring every client feels seen, heard, and respected, no matter their background. Her work has earned recognition in Super Lawyers, the best lawyers in America, and she is a fellow of the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers. Kimberly is also an active member of the Black Women Lawyers Association, the American Bar Association, the Economic Club of Chicago, and Delta Sigma Theta Sorority. She has her own podcast I would highly recommend, Grown Girl Divorce, where she shares practical insights and empowering guidance for people navigating divorce. So let's start off, Kimberly, with, you know, why do so many women come away from family court thinking this is a crazy upside down world? Like,
Yeah. I think there's a couple of things, right? I think that for many women, your experience with divorce comes from what you have seen on television or in a movie or, you know, a friend, a family member, right? And so that then for you shapes what you think your experience will be or should be, right? Because most of us have no real kind of direct connection with divorce until we're actually going through it. Now, are there individuals who, you know, maybe their parents went through a divorce or their best friend's parents, right? And so on some level, you feel like, you know, you have that divorce experience, but realistically, right, you were tangentially connected, right? It wasn't really your experience. And so because you kind of took some things away from that, when you're actually going through it and it doesn't line up in the way that you thought it would, it starts to feel like, oh, wait, this is off. This isn't right. This isn't fair. And it didn't end in 30 minutes as the television show, you know, everything resolves in 30 minutes or the hour and a half movie, right? And you find yourself questioning what's really going on. So I think, you know, it's the fundamental not having a true understanding of divorce process, what the experience really is going to be like. But then also, just as a general matter, most people really don't know what the court system is designed to do and what it's not designed to do. And so, you know, not having really that understanding can really make things feel as though everything is on its head and is out of control and is not going in the way that one would think it would.
And you make a great point, because I have clients who think that too. They've watched some Law and Order or something, right? Yes. And they think, I'm going to have my, you know, 15 minutes of fame when I get on the witness stand. I'm going to say this, yes, that. And it's like, you and I know that only 5% roughly of divorce cases end up in trial. So
that's
sometimes
right,
you never even get a chance to speak at all.
That's so true. Here's the reality. Most people actually never have their day in court. Right. And you certainly may not have that moment where you're sitting on stand and you're railing against, you know, your spouse and laying out all the wrongs that, you know, that have you. And a part of that is because the process, unlike the sensationalized version on television, isn't designed to really give you voice in that way. Right.
Right.
And so if you're looking for that moment, right, of where you can kind of lay out everything that you need to say in one fell swoop, I do tell people you're actually better to get that in the mediation process than waiting on the litigation process. Litigation being the traditional court sit right on the stand, whereas, you know, mediation is the process where you can meet with a mediator and you have the opportunity to lay out and lay bare, right, you know, your issues and your interests and your needs in the way that you may not actually get in court. So,
right,
yes,
right. So
I tell people all the time.
Right. That brings me, yeah, to my second question for you, which is, you know, what did you find and what troubled you about litigation in family law?
A part of really what troubled me with litigation is it's truly designed to be an adversarial process, right? So it's designed for individuals who have issues to present their positions and to have a judge make those decisions. Well, that works well for like contracts or for, you know, criminal in divorce, right? We are fundamentally tearing apart a family because we are requiring them to take a position and to lay out evidence, mm-hmm, most of that evidence being why the other person was a terrible human being or, you know, all of the things that really people really shouldn't, right, know about somebody else in the way that, you know, is required in litigation. And so what I was finding was that people were navigating the divorce space and they were coming out worse than when they came in.
Right.
And that's not even just financially, because in many ways that was happening as well, but they were so torn apart. They didn't have the tools or the knowledge base to know how to proceed going forward, because for so long here, they had a lawyer speaking for them, thinking for them, writing for them, doing all the things, right? Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, what we were kind of leaving people with were all of the pieces, and then say to them, okay, now you got to go clean right it up. And so for me, it really became very challenging as I started to see my own clients really kind of morph into people who were not really prepared to take the next step forward post-divorce. Mm-hmm. And I wanted a process that allowed them to do that. And I found that mediation was that process. Without kind of, you know, going down and getting too far into the conversation, I will also say that COVID threw this entire practice on its head, because this was the first time in history where the courts had shut down. And there was no indication of when we were going to get back going.
So do you think it had a role in forcing more people to mediate who were more acrimonious, perhaps, in the system?
100%. Because here you had cases that just couldn't move forward because they were litigation cases, right?
Right.
We've got no judge. We've got no court. We've got lawyers who can't really get anything done because there's no judge. The cases that were going forward were those cases that were mediation, mm-hmm, right? Because you could quickly pivot to say, okay, I understand that we were all used to being together, you know, in person around the table, let's all hop on Zoom, right? We can still problem solve. We can still move forward. And so it was in that moment that cases started to really pivot, and we really started to see a transition in the practice that really demonstrated that mediation or alternative dispute processes were really the best way to keep a case moving forward for families. This also, I think, came right on the heels of when certain jurisdictions, my own included, where courts were starting to really kind of force parents to really try to work out issues directly themselves by making mediation mandatory for parenting matters. So if the thought was, you as parents are the best people to decide holiday parenting time or, you know, summer parenting time before running to a judge, I want you to try it. So you had that coupled with then, you know, these cases that could keep going, whereas in litigation, they couldn't. Mm-hmm. And so I think it really shined a light on mediation in a way that we now are really seeing most people are choosing to mediate as an option first before even considering the traditional kind of litigation process.
Right. And some of the benefits of mediation for those of you listening or watching is, you know, it's usually faster, right? It's cheaper.
Yes.
You have a neutral and you are there usually without your attorneys, or there can be attorney assisted mediation,
right?
Where you are with your attorneys. And that neutral, their job is to get an agreement, right? They're not representing either side. And I always educate the women I work with, you have to have a review attorney, right? You have to have somebody reading it and redlining it and looking out for your interests. And so does your spouse, right? So those are the advantages. I often get the question, well, how long does mediation take? Well, that depends on so many things, right? Like the number of assets, you know, how well are you going to get along? Are you going to fight over Bobby's baseball camp for 2 months?
Right. That's right. It is, you know, arguably it's faster. And I love that you said, you know, people immediately are like, well, how long is it going to take? Let's put it in perspective, right? So you can go to a mediation session, and let's just say it's, you know, a full day session. So 6 hours or 8 hours, right? And you're laser focused on knocking out the parenting schedule, right? Okay. I can promise you that in the litigation process, that could easily be 6 months. So those 6 hours.
With a huge price tag, right, Kimberly?
With a huge price tag. Those 6 hours, even if at the end of the 6 hours, you've only worked through, you know, the major holidays, and now the mediator is saying, okay, let's do another session. Fine, right? Because if it takes two sessions, maybe even three, now we're talking about 12 hours, maybe, you know, 15 hours total. That is in no comparison to the amount of time that it will take to get the same result if you were to go the traditional route. So it's a time saver. It certainly, you know, can be a money saver. But I 100% though want people to understand that mediation is a problem solving space. And so you have to be wanting to come to problem solve, right? You can't come and say, I have to have the exact schedule that I want. I have to have the exact amount of support that I want. You've got to be able to be open to consider other options and to be open and flexible. But if you're stuck on positions, then the traditional process is really where you're going to find yourself landing.
So that actually brings me to my question about mediation. You know, I help many coaching clients who are escaping coercive controllers and abuse, right? And there's often financial abuse. They could be a stay-at-home mom for years, kept out of the finances. And with mediation, their partner is not really held, you know, in the hot seat to produce the financial documents they need to see. So oftentimes, I feel like if there is that, you know, inequality, that power dynamic, and they know for a fact that their spouse has not been truthful, has been hiding income, I don't recommend mediation. I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah. So here's the key. Mediation is all about balance. So in situations where there is an imbalance, the role of the mediator is to create that level of balance. So one of the things that I recommend is if someone is considering mediation because they really want to try this process, have a conversation with the mediator and understand, you know, what their style is, what their expectations are, but then also ask poignant questions. So let them know, I have concerns because my spouse is the person who's always controlled the finances and I don't have, you know, the necessary information to make certain decisions, right? And so get a real sense of how they respond and how they operate. So that's one. Two, you referenced earlier attorney-assisted mediation. Sometimes that in and of itself can create the balance and the and shift the power dynamic. Because in attorney-assisted mediation, you have your attorney with you in the session, your spouse has their attorney. And so it really does level set how and how together. Okay. So it's really important that if someone feels as though there is a level of imbalance or they're not getting the information, that the balance is somehow created, because you can otherwise mediate, even if you were the person who didn't kind of, you know, have the financial wherewithal or the control or the information. Mm-hmm. However, if you find that it's really, even when you do attorney-assisted mediation, or if you really still feel like, you know, my spouse is really kind of running the show here, the great thing about mediation is it's non-binding and you can at any point in time say, this is not the process for me and I want to pivot. And so be it, right? And so be it. But you really, I think it's worth trying it, but make sure you put the necessary parameters in place to get the balance that's required to be able to make decisions.
And Kimberly, what things do you think women can do to protect themselves as they're headed into a divorce? What do you tell people and clients?
Being educated is really helpful, right? So understanding what I would call, you know, kind of your basic process information, right? So if I have children, what do I need to understand in terms of what the law in my state says, right? So in certain states, there's custody. In other states, it's allocation of decision-making, right? Understanding the basic terms can be very helpful. The same with on the financial side of things. Just understanding, do I live in a community property state or do I live in an equitable distribution? So if you can educate yourself, you obviously don't need to be the lawyer. You don't need to know everything, but basic information, at least understanding certain key words and phrases can be very helpful. That's one. Two, you actually know more than you think you do. Even if you were not the person who was the primary breadwinner or the person who was, you know, kind of handling how expenses were paid, there are certain things that you do know. Write those things down. So I know that my spouse works for this company. I believe that they get paid once a month or twice a month. Or I know that for the last 3 years, we've gone on a vacation three times a year. These places, you know, I know that I pay groceries on an Amex card, but that I use a Chase account for the kids' tuition, right? Even when you don't think you know things, you do, right?
I tell clients that, you know, because some women are frustrated. They say, I don't know. I say, you know, perhaps that he had a Fidelity rollover 401k from his old job. Even if you don't know the account numbers, the attorney wants to know that, because when they, you know, provide their financial statement, which was required in every state, even though it's called different things, right? when you see, hey, the Fidelity account isn't there.
That's right.
That's information, right?
It's information. That's right. So, you know, and whether or not you have window into stuff, mail comes to the house. And even though you're not, you know, say opening it, yes. Oh, I remember getting a Fidelity statement or,
right.
Oh, you know, yes, we signed joint tax returns. I don't have a copy of it, but I remember, you know, that mm-hmm. I believe we did. Write those things down. The same with kid related issues.
Mm-hmm.
It's here's our day-to-day schedule. The one thing I've been saying to in my mediation cases recently is, you know, help me understand your day-to-day mm-hmm. and pretend that I am a, you know, cameraman for your reality show. What am I seeing?
I like that.
Right? Like walk me through it. Because then, you know, people will then start saying, okay, well, we're up at 7 because we've got to get out by 7:45 because kids have to be at school by 8.
Yep.
So you start then creating like a timeline of information,
mm-hmm.
right? From your day to day that you don't think about, but those are the components that are going to help formulate the strategy on the parenting and the financial side. So you know more than you think you do. And the more you can just kind of write down things, mm-hmm. the better you are. And you can really kind of help your lawyer help you.
Right. And I think every family is different to your point. And you're yes. able to talk through some of these things in mediation. What trends are you seeing with your mediation clients? You know, before we got started, I was telling you how I'm taking my son on this college road trip, right? And how in my mediated divorce settlement, it does not cover anything to do with college, cars, car insurance, any of this stuff, which I am obsessed with having my clients make sure are in there. Are you seeing more people think ahead to some of these things, even if their kids are 3 or 4? Because I hope so.
Yes, we are. There's a couple of things that, you know, I'm seeing. I will tell you, we're actually seeing more women as the primary breadwinner.
Interesting.
Which is great, except what that means, though, is then we're also seeing the reverse, right? Which means that they may not know as much about the day-to-day scheduling because their spouse is the one mm-hmm. who's kind of handling it. But on the planning side of things, people are much more well-versed on all of the kind of post-secondary. So those very things that you were discussing, people are very well-versed in those. People are also very coming in and really speaking a lot to what's important for their kids in terms of, we have a lot of kids who are involved in a lot of different things. And so there's a lot of conversation about schedules, parenting schedules that are aligned with like travel sports,
right?
And
right.
having that kind of, you know, how does that impact? Another big one is we have a lot of families who are either of, you know, mixed race or religion. Mm-hmm. And so we're having a lot more conversations about how to balance the mm-hmm. cultural awareness on both sides and extended family. But people are really starting to really give voice to their needs in a way that we didn't always see before, particularly mm-hmm. women, which is very nice. It's a really nice shift.
Good. I like to hear that. You know, anything else that I've missed before we move on to our truth or trap segment that you want to add?
Yeah, I think people should always consider mediation, right? And even if in your mind, you're thinking, my spouse is high conflict, there's no way we're going to ever agree to anything, I think it's worth meeting with different type of mediators, because some mediators, especially former judges, right, have a practice style that really lines itself with high conflict cases. So I would certainly say, check out your options relative to mediation. And if mediation isn't where you find yourself, maybe even look into collaborative, which is a little bit different, mm-hmm. right? You have a collaborative team. You may have a divorce coach who's a part of that team.
Right.
But, you know, consider these as options before just kind of assuming or defaulting to the traditional litigation process. It really can make a difference in your overall divorce experience.
You know, and when we were talking about the cost of mediation, right, as opposed to litigation, and you said at the beginning of this podcast how people have no idea what divorce is really like, right? Because they just picture what they hear or see on TV. And I think there's no more way that's evident than when they get their first bill from a litigator, right?
Yes.
they might fall off their chair, right? Really, because it's like, wait a minute, that one time I emailed them over something that was $400, or I called this time and that was, you know, $1,000 for this issue. So, you know, that can tick up very, very quickly. And I hear this often when sometimes I had a woman the other day who wanted to do just one session coaching with me, and she was stressed about money. And of course, I'm never pushing anyone into coaching with me, but I had to give her a reality check that like my rate for 1 hour is like what you're going to be charged by from a litigator for like reading an email or two, right? And if you aren't aware of that, you know, it's hard because you're making decisions about mediation or coaching or whatever. You know, my cat just came in. Jeez. you know, without the knowledge, right?
It's true. Listen, legal fees are expensive. Mm-hmm. And talk about girl, wake up. This is a wake up moment, right? Legal fees will get the wind out of your sails in a heartbeat. Because people don't conceptually think about the fact that there is an individual who's billing every interaction that they have with you. And so you have to ask yourself, is it really this important for me to be fighting over these sheets? Or the cost that I'm spending to have this lawyer go back and forth, can I just otherwise replace them? Right. Like you have to. And I know that sounds silly in some ways, but it's really true, because then you'll get your bill and you'll be, you know, hitting the roof and wanting to call the lawyer and say, why are we spending so much money on silly things? And their response will be, well, I told you three times that maybe you should let the personal property issue alone, or maybe we should focus on the big picture items. And so, you know, it legal fees certainly tick up in the litigation process, and you hit it spot on. When people get their first, after the first month, there's absolutely a shift, right? You know, right. New clients, I always say, I love a new client. They want to email, they want to call. And I keep saying, okay, I hear you, but you know, maybe let's make this an email. We don't need to schedule a phone call.
Right. It's an emotional time, right? Kimberly?
It's so, an emotional time.
You know, you can pay for that, right? Because you know, that's a role of a coach in many ways. I tell my clients, call me, email me. You're annoyed about what your ex did over the weekend. We can probably handle it. I'm always going to defer to the attorney on legal issues, of course, but some of this little stuff, like we can handle, right? So I think that's really important. Okay. So I want to ask you our truth or trap question. So it's a segment I have here on Girl Wake Up, where I throw out a statement that we may hear in this issue. And you tell me, is it truth or is it trap? The more reasonable and flexible you are in family court, the better the outcome you'll get.
True.
Okay.
And I say that because if you go in with an open mind and being open for considerations, right, of varying options, your outcome will actually be much greater than you think. And it doesn't mean that you're going to roll over. So there is a difference. Mm-hmm. But yes, the more open and flexibility within boundaries and limits, you could end up with a result that is much greater than what you anticipated.
Right. And I think you hit the nail on the head within limits and boundaries. If you're dealing with someone who's pushing that and trying to take advantage of you, that's a different story, right?
Correct. That's right.
Okay. So I have a listener letter from someone in my support group who knew you were coming on the podcast, and She writes, "Hi, Amy and Kimberly. I went into my divorce thinking family court would help protect me and my kids if I just told the truth about what had been happening at home. Instead, I feel like I'm the one being scrutinized while my ex keeps twisting the story and acting calm in public. He has more money, a bulldog attorney, and somehow I keep leaving court feeling like I'm the problem. What should I do?" What do you tell someone like that who is already enmeshed in litigation?
Yeah. So there are a couple of things here, right? You know, first and foremost, you know your spouse best, which means that you've got to play that to your advantage. But in doing that, they also know you. And mm-hmm. so one way to be strategic is to think about what are they going to assume, right, mm-hmm. that I'm going to do or how I'm going to react, and then change that reaction, right? So it's really about controlling the narrative that you can control, mm-hmm. because that's going to help kind of turn the tide. The other thing is, we often hear people and they're like, you know, I've just been telling the truth, but telling the truth and framing it in a way that the court gets it, the guardian ad litem or child representative gets it. And by gets it, meaning this isn't it's not structured in a, I'm not whining, I'm not being antagonistic, but, and this is the key, and this is where people lose sight of things. It also can't always be shrouded in the, they're the worst human and I'm right. the best.
Yes, yes.
There has to be a framing of, here are the challenges that we are facing, and here's what's happening over there, and here's my end of it. Because what happens oftentimes, and this is maybe sounds like what her spouse is able to do, he has figured out, right? If I just stand here and look like I'm doing nothing, right? And I'm kind of the whipping boy, so to speak, right? She's constantly berating me or saying all of the terrible things. At some point, a court's going to say, that might be an exaggeration. He can't be all that bad.
Right?
So you have to reframe it, and you have to be able to demonstrate that here's what's happening, right? Here's how I've been reacting and how I've involved. And here is how, you know, he is reacting. In terms of having a bulldog attorney, it's also key and really important. And I understand resources can change some things. But having a good lawyer doesn't mean the most expensive lawyer. You need exactly. somebody who is going to be responsive and attentive, but somebody who can ensure that what you are trying to get across to the court is done in a credible way and done in the right way. So it sounds like maybe either shifting to get a new lawyer who can kind of help do that, or to rethink the strategy that they're taking at this point. Sometimes it's okay to change lawyers. Not every lawyer,
absolutely.
You know, is and the I, right fit at the right.
right
time.
I just did a video on social media recently about the dangers of hiring a shark attorney, oh. right? Kimberly, I see yes. that in so many moms groups in my area, like, I need a shark. And it is the biggest mistake. And the other thing I want to add to what you said is I just helped a client the other day draft a letter to the judge that she needed to write. And I said, make it about your children, right? It's less yes. about you. That makes yes. it more neutral. I care about the effect on the children, the best interests of the child. And then you're less likely to have your story twisted around as you are the culprit. She's selfish.
That's
she
right.
just wants to live in this big house, you know, for herself. No, it's about stability for my children, for example.
That's right. That's right. You have to frame it. You have to frame things in a way where it really is this, it's not about me. This isn't about me, especially right. when it comes to things relative to the kids, but making it as a directive. And I know that that's hard. As a mother, it's very hard, right, to kind of pull yourself out of that space and try to say, okay, truly, this is what would make the most sense, right? Because there is a part of us, you know, that really contends that the way we see things is best for them. But you have to be able to pull out and say, this is why in this scenario, this makes the most sense. Right. But I my heart goes out to the listener, because it can be very devastating to feel like you keep going in, you keep getting, you know, kind of a result that you didn't expect, and that the other person continues to kind of, you know, get away with things. Maybe relook at the strategy, try to pivot.
You need to have a strategy. And that's why, you know, I bang this drum daily that you cannot rush into these things, rushing into hiring a certain attorney, rushing into a process that isn't the right one for you, because this is kind of what happens. And I'm not blaming the listener. We don't know if she rushed in or not, but this can happen often. Then you realize, oh boy, did I make a mistake? I wasn't thinking this through, right?
That's right. And as we started out this conversation, this experience is not fair, right? As you would think it should be in many ways, right? And so preparing yourself for the expectation and leveling set the expectation of, okay, there will be results that I don't necessarily like or agree with, but I understand how we get from point A to point B. But one of the things I was also going to say, I don't ever like to frame divorce as, you know, positional or war, but the only kind of metaphor that really works is sometimes people need to win the battle so that you can win the war.
Yes, and sometimes I say that often.
I tell my clients a lot, it's fine. If they felt like he won this today and he's riding high, we've got the long game here, right? Like, just stay with
and
me.
You know, I'd say 95% of my clients are dealing with people who have narcissistic personality traits, and they need to feel like they won. So, you know, if you have to pretend you want the boat or the expensive grill or whatever it is when you really don't, you know, and you let go of it and they feel like they won, then that's going to help you strategically, right?
Strategically. You know your spouse. You know your spouse. Use that, right? Use that information. Think it through and really prepare yourself for this strategy that is, you know, the divorce process.
That's a great spot to end. And thank you so much, Kimberly. Where can people find you and find out more about you?
Sure. So I do have a podcast. It is Grown Girl Divorce. But you can also check me out on LinkedIn under Kimberly Johnson Cook. I am a partner with Schiller Ducanto and Fleck here in Chicago. And so our website is SchillerSDFlaw.com. And, you know, please reach out. I serve as both a mediator and individual attorneys for people, whether they're getting divorced or they're dealing with some of the post-judgment issues, or for those who are interested in a prenuptial agreement.
Yes.
You know, please reach out.
All right. And I'll put all those links in our show notes. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Girl Wake Up. I'm your host, Amy Polacco. If this episode woke something up in you, don't let it fade. Share it with a friend who needs to hear it, leave a review, and keep this conversation going. Remember, no one's coming to save you. So she did.